Welcome back to Building Better Businesses in ABA with me, Jonathan Mueller. It's a weekly podcast about the forces reshaping our autism services field. Learn from successful entrepreneurs, payers, investors, and leaders in applied behavior analysis. Thank you, kind listener, for letting me into your world today. Now on to the show. My name is Jonathan Mueller. I'm the host of Building Better Businesses in ABA. And my guest today is Rachel Porter. Rachel is a founder and owner of Colorado Care Consulting, supporting businesses with operations, grant writing, and much more. Prior to founding Colorado Care, she spent nearly 10 years with Gold Star Learning Options here in Colorado, an IDD and an ABA provider. Rachel, welcome to the pod.
Thanks so much for having me, Jonathan. I'm excited to be here.
Well, I'm excited as well because, you know, Rachel, and many of my listeners probably don't know this. I actually, when I transitioned from my Silicon Valley and management consulting career, gosh, almost 20 years ago, I was in the nonprofit world for six, seven, 8 years. And so nonprofits are near and dear to my heart. I was an executive director or CEO. I was responsible for fundraising, grant writing. And let me tell you, there's an art and a science to this like no other. But I want to start with what got you into grant writing?
Great question, because I got this amazing opportunity at the beginning of 2022 to be a part of what's called Creative Ideas Fund. And basically, it was a Mill Levy grant that allowed a bunch of participants that applied, and it was all people that were part of the IDD community, were a part of this grant team, and we were built as a council, and we got to review grants that only supported our industry. And so I got this amazing opportunity where all of a sudden I went from like not knowing anything about grant world, right? Like I truly thought that grants were just for nonprofits. You know, I had no idea that you could write a grant for a profit. And so I was on the council for almost 10 months, and it was the best experience because, again, I got to read all these cool grants where I was like, oh my gosh, yes, I will absolutely support baby showers for people, you know, that find out they have a child with a disability, like, you know, and like then I had a multiple that we supported, like summer camp programs. And it just was an incredible opportunity that opened my eyes to the power of grants and how much they can make a difference for a business, an organization, a PASA agency. They can really unlock so much potential in programming and support our entire community. So, yeah, it changed my life. And so from there, I was able to start writing grants. I learned so much from what people submitted and being like, okay, that's a great way to write a grant. That would be something we need, right? So with Gold Star, I started picking up where I was like, okay, well, this is what we need. I saw a grant that spoke to that. Like, let me kind of explore more. And so I made some connections when I started Colorado Care Consulting and the grant world and was like, hey, I'd love to, you know, pitch some ideas to y'all about some companies I know that need some grants. And from there, it just really developed into a huge, honestly, piece of my business, which is great because I love it.
I will be honest, when we just met back in the fall of 2022, and in spite all of my years in the nonprofit and for-profit worlds, until we met, I had no idea that for-profits could actually apply to grants. And in this case, in full disclosure, we're working together at Ascend to submit some grants to the state of Colorado for some of their digital dollars transformation grant opportunity that comes out of ARPA funding. Grant writing really is, there's a science to it, but there's an art as well. And I'd love for you to tell me, you know, the thing I always think about is, you've got to convince a potential funder that there's this pain in the world, right? There's this gap, this hole to be filled, not unlike an entrepreneur starting an organization. And then how the program that you're writing it for is going to fill that gap and fill that hole, and you're the rescue. But tell me some more about what organizations should think about in writing a high quality grant.
Absolutely. I think a lot of it is just what's your need, right? And really, because the IDD industry, there are so many powerful needs. Each organization has something where it's like, wow, like if we got a training grant, you know, like we would be able to do X, Y, and Z to support, or wrote a grant that was like helping bridge the gap for families, Spanish speaking families, right? And like how best to communicate better with families. And there's all these different needs. So it's identifying the need and then just reading through the grant, right? What is the grant like overarching looking for, and trying to see how you can mesh that, right? Of being like, I have a need. This is, yeah, a pain point. We need to address it. And here's how we will directly like create a positive impact from receiving these grant funds. I think of a way too of like storytelling. I love storytelling in general, but I think there's a way to like tell the story of what you need and hopefully have somebody when they're reading the grant be like, wow, I fully understand what you guys are asking for here, and I get it. So I think there it's like a beautiful blend, right?
I want to come back to the storytelling in a moment, but you highlight this really important point that, I mean, it's pretty extraordinary because, Rachel, what I'm about to describe is like what you learn in, I think, kindergarten or first grade, right? Is read the instructions.
Yes.
Just read the instructions. And grants and funders generally are very clear, not only about their intentions and why they're putting the grant out, but also on the letter of the law for what your application should look like. And it's amazing how many organizations just don't read the instructions and therefore their grants are getting thrown out from the get-go. Do you see this?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I cannot agree more. Sometimes it's like they're asking you point blank a simple question. Like it's a simple question. How are you going to answer it? You know, the biggest thing I get when people reach out to me needing help with grants as well is just like, is there more to this grant that I'm missing? Or it's like really overwhelming because there are so many questions. And some of them can be so simple too that it's like, yep, that's truly what they're asking. You can just write it in one, two sentence. It can be simple, or we can have a whole narrative around it, you know? And I think that's what makes grant writing interesting. I think because of my experience working with PASAs, which are a provider approved service agencies in Colorado, but like understanding what it's like to be a part of the waivers and then built with ABA too, and understanding all the services that these amazing providers are providing for families. I understand the need and what they're saying. So it helps me be able to unlock the narrative and storytelling a little bit more quickly to write a grant. I fully understand, like down to when you and I have chatted, where I'm like, yep, got it. I fully understand what your need is. And so I think that's a big piece of grant writing too.
Again, I'll come back. It's no different than trying to pitch a startup organization or any organization. What I notice is entrepreneurs and or, you know, nonprofit leaders sometimes writing grants, it's like you immediately dive into telling everything there is about the organization, right? But it's not about the organization. It's never about you as an entrepreneur or as an organization or as a nonprofit. What is it about? It's about the families you serve, or the community service work that you're doing, or the environmental work, or it doesn't matter. It all comes back to your mission and the people you're serving. And you've got to focus grants around that in order to draw, to your point around storytelling, draw people into the reader into the story. So tell me some more about storytelling. Like, what have you learned over the years? And this is a skill, I mean, way beyond grant writing, that's just so important in life. But what have you learned about what makes for a good story?
Ooh, good question. I think what makes a good story is the passion that people can see when you're telling a story, right? How you engage your listeners and making sure that obviously you don't go off on too many tangents. Same with grants, right? You need to have a concise narrative that's not too far off with different details. But the beauty of storytelling, I think a lot of times, is really the passion that you can evoke from your stories, you know, and kind of to your point too, is like the mission and vision. What is at the meat, right? Of what your company, your organization, whatever, what is the heart of it? And so being able to do your story around the heart of your mission and vision is how you can really attract people to being like, hey, this is what we do and here's a need. And you go from there, right? I don't know. I've always loved storytelling in general, just in my life. But I feel like throughout the years, you really learn how to, when people don't know even what IDD means, when somebody's like, what does IDD mean? or even was neurodivergent mean? And we have so many acronyms too in this world. And so it's a, how do you storytell and connect people too that don't understand what we do in our population? So again, storytelling is just a huge piece of all of this, of being like, yep, these are the people that we serve. These are the services we provide, and putting those stories together in those snapshots to really highlight at a high level too, right? Of just like, hey, this is what we're doing and can provide. And I always think of it too, of just when somebody doesn't know our world, how to describe our world too. So I think that's a big piece I've learned throughout the years. You know, somebody might not really even understand what is behavior therapy, you know? So how do you describe that in two sentences? It's tough.
It is tough. It's a great point. Like, we can't assume that the reader, whether, and again, yeah, this applies in grant writing, it applies in putting a business plan together. Yep. You know, you are such a deep domain expert in your area of focus that it's easy to assume the audience already knows. You can never assume that. Well, you know, that part of what makes storytelling fascinating to me, I like the podcast, Revisionist History, Malcolm Gladwell. I don't know if you've ever listened to it, but he had an episode. Yeah, it's fantastic. Malcolm Gladwell's great. He just has this very sardonic way of writing and just like thinking about the world. He's written Outliers, Tipping Point, and all kinds of others. Anyway, he had an episode on his podcast where he talked about why country music is so compelling. And it came down to one thing. It was like very sadly specific. And this idea like of people, these songs in which, you know, singers would write about the fact they grew up in a place where, I don't know, their parent kicked their dog and, you know, the truck blew up. Anyway, I'm not doing it good justice, but the ideas are specificity. And I think the takeaway for me in grant writing is, when you tell a story, it's not the abstract, hey, here's the tough stuff that's happening out there and the need, and here's like the abstract of how we meet the need. But you got to get specific about, you know, people or situations. And it's part of that personalization that makes it a really powerful story.
I couldn't agree more. So the first time I ever wrote a piece was, I was like 24 and I had this experience happen where I wrote about the power of getting the community involved in community awareness. And I wrote a paper about it and was actually able to go for free to this conference in San Francisco because I wrote this story about how I was doing ABA therapy with a girl in front of the school and she was trying to disrobe in front of a school and nobody helped me. And I even was trying to hold on to her pants and everything. And anyways, it was just the power of like, if just somebody took a second, nobody had ever seen behavior therapy. And I'm doing a really bad job telling the story, but bottom line, it was an experience where I was just like, if just somebody knew in the community to stop and be like, hey, do you need help? And I'd be like, yes, can you just grab her arm really quick so I can make sure I keep her pants on so she doesn't disrobe in front of hundreds of little elementary school kids, you know, as I'm truly stopping traffic in the middle of the street, nobody came and helped me. And so it was a powerful experience for me where I was like, the power of just having our community understand that everybody is different and there's experiences that happen like that, where it's just like, hey, just stop and ask if somebody's okay and if they need help. Maybe they don't, or maybe they do. And so, you know, that was an experience that I had that I think for that storytelling and that writing piece, kind of talking about like, you hit a great point where it's like, I wrote the specifics of how I was fighting to make sure her belt stayed on. Cause I was like, if this belt comes off, like we're disrobing. And the details and the specific pieces, I think, is why then they were like, you have to come to this conference, because they thought that that story was so powerful. And so, I don't know. I think we just need to share our stories. Sometimes they're specific really stories and they're really great. And same with grant writing. You never know if you need to include those details or if it just needs to be, yeah, broad strokes. But all of that kind of ties into grant writing in some way, shape or form, right? Because it's the person that you're writing about, whether it's the family member going through something or an actual client. So it all kind of ties in.
Oh, wow. That's a moving story just hearing you describe it. I remember, you know, back when my wife and I lived in Reno, these are my my nonprofit days, I had a mentor and a guy, an executive director of a nonprofit that I really look up to. And he used to say two things. He would just literally get up in his presentation and say, as the executive director of a nonprofit, you need numbers, you need stories. And it was so phenomenally true, right? You need to be able to, you know, document outcomes to whatever, whatever you're trying to accomplish, and you need to be able to tell those stories. Well, Rachel, one of the things that I think probably a lot of, especially smaller ABA providers, don't appreciate is that there are lots of funding opportunities out there, right? And things that you've been unearthing and helping me to see. And, you know, we've got listeners from across the country. I appreciate you're based in Colorado and you found a lot of opportunities here, but can you tell me a little bit more? What should an ABA provider do to go, whether you're a for-profit or nonprofit, to go try to find some of those funding opportunities?
There are a ton of different resources out there, actually. There's different websites that you can pay membership fees for, but they're all really reasonable. Some I just paid $30, some are up to $200, but there's a bunch of different resources that you can begin to Google and be like, hey, like I want to start with grant writing. And maybe it's just starting with understanding if you have any state entities like we do in Colorado, where it's like I started with our community center board. So if you have community center boards or state entities that you can be like, hey, I'd love to know what grant resources you have. Or like I said, Google is a great way to find what grants are available for profits. And you can type in ABA grants and different things. And then, you know, I think Colorado specifically does have these ARPA grants that are huge. I mean, right now there is a wave of funding that is coming down to support mental and behavioral health right now. And so it's a huge initiative. There's like up to $300 million across the country they're using in different ways through grants. And so that's too a place where you can start being like, hey, let me look into these grants that all of a sudden the whole country is getting or can get a piece of the pie, right? So I think you can find grants really anywhere. You really can, even for profit. A lot of them are made for nonprofit, but again, ARPA grants, working with state entities and like it, getting connected. You never know too if you find an amazing organization that believes in what you're doing, your story, your clients, all those moving pieces where it's like, hey, can we partner in a way where I'm still a for-profit and applying for a grant? I've definitely had those opportunities for clients open up. So I think there's a couple different levels you can do it on.
Yeah. And I want to clarify ARPA for our listeners. Yes. That's the American Rescue Plan Act, passed in spring of 2022. That was, I think, the third of three installments of different big federal legislation that have happened because of the coronavirus pandemic. So, you know, the first, I think, was around the PPP and all of that back in 2020. And then the CARES Provider Relief Act, I think that was 2021. Yes. And that gave a whole bunch of funding in particular to provide, it's still giving funding to providers who accept Medicaid. Sometimes that's just boom, automatic block grants that show up in your claims. And sometimes you got to apply, but there's a variety of stuff that goes on there. And then ARPA, actually is a broader net. And these block grants that were given to each state, each of the 50 states, and these are meant as relief funds that states could determine how they are doled out, but it's meant to address the coronavirus pandemic, but that's ARPA. And I think it's a really important point for listeners, like just Googling, I mean, you can Google everything these days, right? But there are these listservs, just listservs you can get on that are going to tell you about local funding opportunities. And, or if you're lucky enough to, you know, connect with a Rachel at Colorado Care Consulting, who is already like looking out for this stuff. It now feels just like a hard time, to be honest, for ABA providers in the field, just knowing that cost of capital has increased, so it's harder to get funds, knowing that revenue cycle and collection is always hard in the best of times, and now it's, you know, it's getting even harder. So there's just a lot of stuff that's going on now that's tough. But are you seeing some of those challenges as well in IDD and the ABA field?
Absolutely. Jonathan, I'm really glad you brought that up, just because I'm seeing it, and it's definitely amping each year, right? Like the cost of inflation and making sure that we really pay our amazing workers that are here with the best intentions, right, to support our individuals and people, right? And so we have to pay more for staff, but yet Medicaid and insurance rates are rising. So I feel like we're starting to have a real bottleneck effect too, where so many people need services and we also don't have enough staffing. And then the costs are rising for business owners. And so it is why of all times, again, my business for Grant World, when I started, I thought maybe it would be like 20% of my business. And it's definitely 60% of my business, because so many companies are like, hey, I need help, you know, like help create the resources, like, or what resources are out there for grants for me, right? And, you know, I get calls all across the country. Yesterday was Utah, and being like, how do we serve residential care in Utah and support this agency who are all doing amazing work? So, you know, it's just, again, it's getting creative, seeing what grants are out there. I love to know what the need is, and then I can piece that together with what grants are out there. And but of all times, grants are really needed for this industry. It's monumental almost, and being a game changer for the organization.
Yeah. And I wonder if you talk a little bit about this concept of sustainability. You know, just like any funder, and sustainability can mean a thousand different things. But when it comes to grant writing and sustainability, you know, funders like to think that they are catalyzing, whether it's new programs and initiatives or really juicing like current programs and initiatives. They don't like feeling like they're simply, oh, let's top off the bucket on this one. And if it gets funded for 1 or 2 years, that's great, but then nothing happens. So can you talk a little bit about the importance of describing sustainability in grants?
Absolutely. Sustainability is huge. I mean, I don't ever want to write a grant where it's like, hey, we're writing it for a position and we have to bank on getting another grant next year to keep this position going, right? Sustainability to me is being able to keep that program grant going. That's why I do the consulting piece as well, because as much as I want to get the grants for you, we have to figure out a way to keep your company sustaining that growth and revenue so that we can, you know, yeah, it can be, you know, I put it in my blog, but it's just like a cherry on top of the sundae kind of feeling, where when you get a grant, it's like, perfect. This is the mode, the vehicle to help me maybe start the program. But how can we, again, we sustain it? And so sustainability, depending on what the grant is, definitely needs to be something addressed when you are writing grants. I do ask that question, whether it's actually in the grant. A lot of grants have sustainability, but I put that in there because it's good to talk about. And it's good to talk about too when I am meeting with business owners, of being like, what is your plan after this grant? We only have 12 months or 6 months or whatever it is. How will you continue this project going? You know, so it is a very important piece.
I think a good example of that is, you know, programs that then once you get them up and running, there is earned income that's generated from it. And I think back to my days as Sierra Nevada Journey. So this is the nonprofit I started and was, you know, CEO of for 6+ years. And, you know, we worked with a California foundation who had this 1500 acre ranch up in the Sierra, and it was beautiful robes courses and, you know, gorgeous facilities and just like tons of hiking trails and cabin, you name pond to go fishing in. And one of the things that really, we ended up developing a relationship in which they gave us a multi-million dollar grant over many years. And the idea was, look, we're going to donate this, or you all are going to run this ranch. And we want you to run it in a way that's going to allow you not just to keep serving, you know, all the different underrepresented communities and populations, but to then get earned income opportunities, for example, for like summer camps, right? Where kiddos might be able to pay. And that was an amazing 10-year journey, actually, like, you know, 7 or 8 years after I left, the foundation finally then did fully, and Sierra Nevada Journeys had done the whole capital campaign, and the foundation, Sierra Health Foundation, turned over the keys. I mean, it was one of these awesome moments. This just happened a few years ago. But the point is, the idea is with their funding and their partnership, Sierra Nevada Journeys was able to catalyze that program and turn, it wasn't fully earned income generating, right? We still have to do fundraising and other things for it. But it was able to catalyze this new program. And I think that's what funders want most. That's what makes their dollars feel like they're going farthest.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And grant money has that potential, right? To give that lasting impact that you can continue to grow and develop and have that, yeah, lasting impact. So that's why they're so amazing.
Well, Rachel, what's one thing every ABA business owner should start doing and one thing to stop doing?
Ooh, good question. I think culture really matters. So making sure that you care about your culture for your ABA company, because the one thing kind of tying back to, you know, inflation and pay rates and different things, I really believe in the power of culture and building that within your company. And I think that ABA, it can be a tough field, right? And so I think taking a moment as a business owner to look at the culture and make sure that then that staff, when they are having a hard week or two, feel the love and the connections with others and your mission, your vision, and what you're actually doing to provide supports for families. So I think culture is a big piece. And then stop doing. Really good question. You know, I think ABA just needs to stop. I don't know. I guess like my biggest thing is making sure we don't over-therapize kids and just taking a moment to really make sure that you are providing purpose-driven services for families and just really meeting those needs and, you know, really supporting families. We've seen from COVID, mental health has increased. Families need more support than ever. So maybe ABA isn't exactly need to be shaped the way that you think it needs to be shaped. And so I think just kind of making sure you stop a second to look at the therapy you're providing. And it doesn't always fit for everybody. So that's a roundabout way of just being like, take a moment to make sure you're really providing purpose-centered supports, you know?
Yeah. I mean, and what I heard there is treatment that's focused on the kiddos and individualized to their needs. That's important. And you're looking at it in context, right? As it's not just, hey, I'm going to go ABA you. It's like, what's happening in the home environment? What kinds of social determinants of health are coming into play? So well said. Rachel, where can people find you online?
Oh my gosh. Find me on LinkedIn, Rachel Porter or Colorado Care Consulting, or my website is coloradocareconsulting.com. So feel free to find me wherever works best for you.
Nice. All right. Are you ready for the hot take questions?
Oh my gosh. I think so. I'm ready.
All right. You're on your deathbed. What's the one thing you want to be remembered for?
Oh my gosh. Care and compassion. Ooh. Being a caring and compassionate person, you know, and maybe an added, like, Rachel's always the funniest person. I don't know, should we laugh? That would be.
What's your most important self-care practice?
Oh, I love to watch sports. Big sports girl. So I self-soothe by watching a good sports game. It can be anything.
Denver-related teams or any sport, any teams?
Any sport, any team. I mean, I do love the Denver Broncos, but for me, it can truly be anything. And I love, gosh, the World Cup's going on right now. Like, I love watching different teams. And when you're like at a penalty shootout, I mean, that I'm like, oh gosh, like it doesn't matter who wins to me, but this is just a great game, but you know, that it's coming down to this. So I don't know. I really enjoy watching sports, and it's something I even do. I have a TV in my office just so that I can watch sports at times and work. So here you go.
Love it. What's your favorite song?
I have a whole playlist called Feel Good that has like 54 songs on it that are all my favorite. But I don't know, probably Ace of Base, I Saw the Sign. I don't know. Something About a Kid, I really loved that song. And I still play it when I'm in a really good mood.
That was like my anthem my senior year of high school. I Saw the Sign. It still brings me way back. I love it.
It's such a music video. It's so good.
If you could give your 18-year-old self one piece of advice, what would it be?
Slow down. Everything will work out. I think when you're 18, life is moving so fast. At the time, I was like, am I going to get married and have kids in the next couple years? Like, slow down. Life will happen how it's meant to be, right? So that's my advice.
All right. So you can only wear one style of footwear. What would it be?
Oh my God, 100% slippers, no questions asked. I wear slippers all the time. I hate tennis shoes. They're too much work to tie.
They are. I just got myself my first pair of slippers like a year ago, I want to say, and they were a game changer wearing it around the house. I loved them.
I have different types. You know, I have slippers for the house. I have slippers for going to the grocery store. You have to have a variety of different slippers and something comfortable for your feet at all times. There you go.
I'm there. Hey, Rachel, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. I've enjoyed our conversation.
Same here. Thanks so much for having me, Jonathan. I appreciate you.
Hey, kind listener. Thanks for tuning in. If you like this episode, can you do me a favor? Give me a rating on your favorite podcast channel. It helps more values-aligned people like you find the pod. Till next time, peace.
I walked into my sister's room and tripped on a bra. It was a booby trap.